Sullivan Hart looked downright dangerous. Coke took the paper with reluctance, looking it over at arm's length. Sims noted the way Coke's eyes appeared lost as they scanned the words.
Quite right. Indeed, they have done it, Marshal Sims. That comes from the highest court in this nation. I must abide by it. Not only has Tuck Priest's hanging sentence been commuted, the jury's verdict against him has been reversed. At midnight last night, Mr. J.T. Tuck Priest departed from my jail a free man. He was accompanied by his attorney, R. Martin Swan. I wasn't there, but I was informed by the captain of my guards that Tuck Priest was laughing aloud.
I bet he was.
Sorry, Hart.
Sullivan Hart only nodded and looked away, his brow mantled by dark brooding.
Fortunately, for all concerned, Hart and Roth were both up in Ohio, transporting a couple of prisoners back here to stand trial for rape and murder. I dare say, if Hart had been here and had knowledge of this, he would have killed Tuck Priest in the street. I couldn't have had that happen, of course.
Certainly not, sir.
And this all has something to do with why you sent for us, Your Honor?
Yes. I want the four of you involved in this situation. Tuck Priest and his men will be out to kill you, Sims. You know that as well as I do. I want you out in front of this, and I want you three to do whatever it takes to bring this man and his gang down.
Of course, Your Honor. Consider it done.
Judge Parker nodded at the cast on Sims' foot.
I realize you are at a disadvantage right now, but you'll have to make do somehow.
Excuse me there, sir. What exactly is this priest being charged with? I mean, we get paid for arresting a man. What do we arrest him for? Who gets the fee for doing it?
As I stated earlier, Marshal Coke, these marshals will fill you in on any particulars.
Whoa, 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 Your Honor. Not to cut you short, sir, but I always work alone. If you recall, I told you so when you hired me. You agreed to it.
Yes, so I did, Marshal Coke. But what I said specifically was that we would try to keep things that way if the situation permitted. This incident with Priest has changed things, for the time being at least. Now, I need your help on this.
With all due respect to everybody here, Judge Parker, why me? There's four other marshals in town right now. Any one of them would be suitable for this job.
How old are you, Marshal Coke? 33? 34?
34, Your Honor. Not that I see what my age has to do
with it. And you were a bounty hunter how long before taking on a badge?
A couple of years, sir, give or take.
Before that, you were a school teacher, I believe. In Nashville?
Yeah, Nashville. I left teaching and went north to serve in the Army.
For the Union. In spite of your southern upbringing and your family's wishes, you chose to fight for the Union.
It was a matter of personal belief at the time. If I had to do it over, I can't say how it would go.
Be that as it may, Marshal, you followed your own heart and mind.
Yes, but I don't see what that has to do with what we're talking about here.
You saw things in the war that for some reason kept you from going back into that classroom. You decided instead to take up a gun and make your living hunting down wanted men for bounty money. Isn't that about the size of it?
I made a living at it. I'm not ashamed of what I did. They were all killers, felons. Somebody had to bring them in. The regular lawmen weren't all that successful, or they wouldn't have been paying rewards.
Nevertheless, you have shown an aptitude for this kind of work. Isn't that correct?
Hold it, Your Honor. There's no point in us going in a circle about this. I work alone. Always have, always will. There's no room for discussion on it. I'm not the man for this job. Besides, Sims and I haven't exactly hit it off. And Hart and Roth here don't know me from a load of coal.
Sims looked away in detachment. Hart and Roth shot one another a dubious glance.
Very well. I understand. I'm putting together a four-man posse. You were my first pick for this job, but if you don't think you can handle working with these men, I suppose there's little else to be said on the matter.
Thank you, Judge Parker. Will that be all?
Yes, that's all. You can leave your badge with Daniel Slater on your way out.
Jake Coke didn't catch Parker's meaning until he'd almost reached for the doorknob.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
That's right, you heard me. I can't have a man working for me who won't follow my orders. Too bad. I had such high hopes for this one.
Yeah, me too. I heard so many good things about that sawed-off rifle.
Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth nodded slightly in agreement.
You're firing me?
Yes, exactly.
Well, damn. I've never been fired in my life.
Then today must be a momentous occasion for you. Please close the door behind you.
All right, then. I will.
Once again, Coke stopped short of reaching for the knob.
Can I say something? I've been with you 2 months, Your Honor. I've been sent out 4 times with arrest warrants, and all 4 times I've brought back the man I was after. Every one of them were gunslingers, hard case murderers. One of them was Ned Fireball Perry. I happen to know that 3 other marshals avoided going after him because of his reputation with a gun. I brought him back face down across a saddle for $2 damn, which I come to find out I didn't even get because he was dead. But I didn't complain. Now, all I'm asking is to work alone, the way all your other men do. And you're telling me you're gonna fire me for that?
No, I've already fired you. All I'm telling you now is to please close the door behind yourself.
Don't worry, Your Honor. He'll do just fine once I've had time to work with him.
He'd better, Sims. If Tuck Priest isn't going to answer for killing Coleman Hart, then by thunder, I'll see him answer for whatever he does next. And believe me, Tuck Priest will go afoul of the law. You can count on it. When Priest makes a move, I want you deputies
there. We'll be
there,
Your Honor.
Ready and
waiting. As far as this new man goes, I'd just as soon as he not be with us. Roth and I can handle this. Sims has no business on a horse right now anyway.
Oh? Really? Just because I have a cast on my foot, you think I'm not able to keep up with...
That's right, Sims. The fact is, if it hadn't been for you bringing Priest in alive, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. I would have brought him in over a saddle. Look at you. Half the time you don't even wear a gun.
That's true. Half the time I don't. But it's the other half the time that counts. So don't think that just because we happen to operate a little different that I can't do whatever it takes.
That's enough, both of you. Is anybody listening to me this morning? I'm putting you men together as a posse, and I'll hear no more dissension. Is that clear?
Sorry, Your Honor. Hart and I always have to clear the air a little before we get down to business.
Two Jack Roth had stood back in silence, taking it all in. Now he stepped forward, nudging Sullivan Hart to one side.
Sims is right, Your Honor. Don't worry. We'll all work together on this case.
When the 3 men left the judge's office, Hart turned to Sims outside the closed door.
Any ideas where Priest might be headed?
I bet his attorneys would know. But I doubt if they'll be telling us.
I'd be pleased to go ask him.
Why don't you go do that while I go talk to Coke? Let him know he's still in on this.
Damn it, Sims, you know he's in no mood to be around Priest's attorney. One cross word and he's apt to kill them.
Oh? I hadn't considered that.
But he fired me, Sims. You heard him do it.
Coke was standing at the bar of the Red Bull.
What gets me is you're the one he told to stop gambling or turn in your badge. All I've done is try to make a living.
Well, life does have its irony. The main thing is I straightened everything out for you with Parker. You're not fired.
Sims, what I said still goes. I work alone. Get that in your head.
I understand, Coke. What you don't realize is that I always work alone myself. We'll all be working alone, only this time we'll all be doing it together.
Sims, we're awfully close to having trouble, you and me. I took this job to make myself some money, not to fool around with you or your trifling attitude.
Easy, Coke. If we play our cards right on this thing, there's some money to be made. A lot more than you're going to make dragging in dead bodies one or two at a time.
Oh? I don't see how.
Let me call some names off to you, Coke. Denton Howell. Max Shepard. Joe Cherry. Any of those ring a bell?
Well, yeah. Denton Howard is $2,000 on the hoof. Shepard is worth $1,500. Joe Cherry is worth $1,000. If he's still alive and the opium and cocaine hasn't killed him yet.
No, he's alive, all right. So are many others you'd like to draw bounty on. They're alive and well, and all of them riding with Los Pistoleros. But that's only three men with prices on their heads. There's more, many more. You starting to get the picture?
How do you know so much about who's riding with the gang?
It's my business to know. There are things I find out playing poker with the likes of Roundhouse Eddie and his rabble.
I thought you were only playing with Wiley Sugar.
Well, that's true. But any time I play, there's always more than one game going on. These are men you couldn't beat information out of with a club. Get them around a gaming table and they always let something slip.
If we did this, how deep do we have to cut the reward between the four of us?
If we do this my way, there's no cut. It's all yours. Hart and Roth aren't in it for the money. You heard what Priest did to Hart's father. Killed him. Cut off his ears. All Hart wants is to see JT Priest pay for it. It's the same with Roth. He and Hart's father were partners. It's strictly personal with those two.
And you?
I'm not in this for the money either. I can make more money tossing cards any day of the week than I can wearing this badge.
Then why are you wearing it?
Call it a quirk in my extravagant nature. Fact is, I won't be wearing this badge much longer. Thinking about going into business for myself. Sims and Associates. Detective agency. Huh? Thought I might give old Alan Pinkerton some competition.
As he spoke, Sims took a business card from inside his lapel pocket and passed it to Jake Coke.
I already made up some cards, see? They were right there. It says Sims and Associates. Detective agency.
Yeah, I see.
So you care to listen to what I have in mind?
Shoot.
What we need is a man on the inside of Los Pistoleros. Last time it was me, playing JT Priest along like a big fish. But that'll never happen again. He'll kill me the moment he lays eyes on me. But you can do it, Coke. You're still new enough at Marshallin' that all you gotta do is convince the gang that you got a raw deal from Parker and quit him. Make him think you got a mad on for him, for me or anybody else riding out of Fort Smith.
Tell them I refused to work with you and the others, and Parker fired me for it.
See? You don't even have to make it up. Just make sure from this minute on that no one knows any different except for you, me, and Judge Parker himself.
All right. So what then?
Well, once they take you in, find out where their main stronghold is. Now, I know it's near Sonora, Mexico, but I don't know exactly where. You can bet that's where Priest is headed.
If you know that, why didn't you mention it in the judge's office?
No, must have slipped my mind. The main thing is, you find out the information we need and get it to me. Sullivan Hart, Two Jack Roth, and I will join you. We'll take Los Pistoleros down for good. You get the bounty money on every man there. Of course, we have to get him back across the border, but we'll work that out when the time comes.
We really could be talking about a lot of money. All I have to do is get to Sonora as quick as I can, hook up with the right gunman, and let them take me in.
There you are. How fast can you get there?
With spare horses, I can be there before Priest clears the road dust out of his mouth.
That's the kind of talk I like to hear, partner.
After a moment of discussing their plans, Jake Coke left the saloon, tipping his hat to Kate McCorkle as she stepped inside, the two of them passing one another through the batwing doors.
What are you up to, Charlie?
Why, nothing, Kate. Just trying to figure out the best way to go about carrying out the judge's orders.
Oh yeah, what orders?
Brace yourself, Kate. You're not going to like this any more than I do.
When he'd told her the whole story, Kate McCorkle shook her head slowly.
And now the four of you are going after them, you with your busted ankle?
Well, that's what the judge would like to see happen, but it's not quite what I have in mind. I've convinced Marshal Coke to ride down to Sonora and take up with some of Priest's men. Then Hart, Roth, and myself will ride in and close this thing for good.
You mean you trust this Jake Coke enough to send him ahead? That doesn't sound like you, Charlie. Does Hart and Roth know you're doing this?
No, they don't. I'll tell them about it later. But it doesn't matter. I've got a good hunch about this man, Coke. I believe he can handle JT Priest, Los Pistoleros, and anything they throw at him.
I think he's an interesting man, our young bounty hunter. He isn't able to read, you know.
How do you know that? Did he tell you?
Yeah, in a roundabout way.
Sims took the business card from his pocket and handed it to her.
I suspected it in the judge's office when Coke looked confused at the court order. Well, just to make sure, I handed him this card, told him it was a card for Sims and Associates Detective Agency.
Deavers, Lyons, and Swan, attorneys at law? You should be ashamed of yourself.
It pays to know about the man you're going to be working with. Jake Coke's a serious man who won't let anything stop him.
Oh, and you've decided all this just because he can't read. I've known plenty of people who can't read. I didn't see where it made them anything extraordinary.
Oh, really? How many of them did you know ever taught school?
He can't read, and he was a schoolteacher?
Yep, among other things. Shows real enterprise, don't you think? But you misunderstood me, Kate. I never said he can't read. I said he isn't able to. That's much worse. He has a problem with his eye, you may have noticed. I'm sure he knows how to read and write as well as you and I. Problem is, I suspect that when he tries to focus on words, they appear all jumbled up. So yes, I do think it's extraordinary that a man can overcome something like that.
Can anything be done to correct it?
So far, there's no cure. Some people live with it their whole lives. Others, well, I hate to say it, but if it keeps getting worse, they often go blind.
Oh, that's horrible. Do you suppose his eyes affect anything else? Say, his aim? His ability to fire that sawed-off rifle?
No, but I think he must prepare himself before doing any serious shooting. One young man I knew as a child had a trick he used. He counted numbers in his mind. It somehow kept a rhythm going, helped him focus.
And you think Coke does the same thing?
Who knows? Must have some technique worked out for him. He's still alive, after all. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to meet Hart and Roth and get on Priest's trail. Hart wanted to talk to Priest's attorney before we head out, see if he can get a lead on Priest.
Hart ought to know better than that. Priest's attorneys won't give him the time of day.
Oh, I don't know. Sullivan Hart can be very persuasive when he has a mind to.
In the livery barn behind the courthouse, Deputy Daniel Slater walked in as Jake Coke drew the cinch taut on his dapple gray saddle and dropped the stirrup.
I understand Parker fired you.
News travels fast around here.
I hated hearing it.
Yeah, well, I ain't too broken up over it. One thing stops, another thing starts, I reckon.
Going back to bounty hunting, are you?
No, I've had my fill of making a living with a gun. If a man's gonna risk his life, he ought to make sure he's making the best dollar he can from it.
You're talking outlaw talk, ain't you?
If I was, do you think I'd tell you, deputy?
Coke stepped away from the dapple gray to where he'd hitched three of the horses he'd brought the bodies in on. He led them forward, looking them over. When Coke tied the horses behind his big dapple gray, Slater rested a hand on the rump of a wiry roan.
Three spares. Looks like wherever you're headed, it's going to require some hard traveling.
These horses are my ticket across the territory, if you must know.
Look, no need to be tested with me. I just came down to see y'all.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Hey, how well do you know these Quick Charlie Sims?
As well as I ever want to, I reckon. He nearly drove Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth crazy trying to figure out what he was up to. Sims is a gamesman. You have to watch his every move. He doesn't even carry a gun, you know. Says a man should be slick enough to never have to shoot his way out of a tight spot.
Yeah, I heard that about him. I also saw that young woman in action. I reckon with her around, a man need not worry.
Kate's got the temper of a wildcat. You don't want to cross her.
I'll do my best not to.
Sims turned and walked to his loaded saddlebags hanging from a row of wooden pegs. Slater stepped in beside him as Coke opened the bags, took out a tin of gunpowder and a bag of lead and empty brass cartridges. Coke emptied the bag onto a flattened bale of hay, took stock of his supplies, and then put them away.
So you really do load your own ammunition?
Yeah, I always do. I trust nobody's skill like I do my own. I figure there's been men that died because somebody somewhere didn't have their mind on business the day they loaded his cartridges. When I load my own, all I'm thinking about is that it's these babies' job to keep me alive.
Makes sense, I suppose. I heard a man say that once he saw you swing that hip rifle faster than the two fellers facing you could draw their pistols.
Well, you heard that, huh? Well, a man can hear most anything out here if he listens close enough.
Then it ain't true?
Oh, it's true enough. But it ain't something I go around telling. The less a person knows about what I can and can't do, the more advantage I have if push comes to shove between us. Once a man shows his hand, he has no hand left to show. Now, if you'll excuse me, I want to put as much distance between me and the hanging judge as I can. I've wasted 2 months of my life in this place.
I understand. But don't be too hard on the judge. Parker has to make the law work out here, one way or the other.
Well, I'd expect you to say something like that, being the judge's right-hand man.
Coke stepped over to the dapple gray with his short rifle in his hand, picking up its reins and let it out into the mid-morning sunlight, Slater following him.
If you got something to do, go on ahead. I need to check my rifle before I ride out into Indian territory.
I got nowhere I've got to be right now.
I don't like doing this in front of people. I already told you why.
I never saw a thing.
Jake Coke considered it for a second, looking around the large empty corral until he spotted an old out-of-use jail wagon sitting 20 yards away.
All right, cover your ears. These are overloads.
Overloads? I never heard such a thing as an...
Oh!
Jake Coke walked sideways back toward the dapple gray. Splinters and dust showered upward from the wheels of the old jail wagon as spoke after spoke vanished from its hub. On the 10th shot, Jake Coke stopped less than a foot from the dapple gray's side. The big dapple gray stood as if frozen in place, except for a twitch of its shoulder muscle.
Good boy, Cyrus.
20 yards away, the jail wagon lay on its side in the dirt, the spokes of both right wheels lying in splinters. Deputy Slater stared at it in awe. Jake Coke rolled the short rifle into its holster.
Don't forget, Slater, you never saw a thing.
Oh, Lord God! You could have warned a feller first. I'm near death.
I did warn you first. You just weren't paying attention.
Well, I will from now on. How many rounds does that fire bucket carry?
15. I make it a practice never to fire over 10 at a time unless I have to. The barrel gets hot. Besides, you never know. The men you just shot might have angry kinfolks hanging around.
See there, it's no wonder the judge wanted you to work with Sims. You've got the most weaponry of anybody here.
Then the judge shouldn't have fired me.
I bet he'd give you another chance if you talk to him real respectful-like.
You think so, huh? Just go dragging in there with my hat in my hand. No thanks, Deputy.
By the time Sims arrived at the brick building that housed the offices of Devers, Lyons, and Swan, Esquires, a crowd had gathered out front in the dirt street. Upon nearing the scene, Sims saw the crowd part as Lyle Devers staggered backward through it. Sullivan Hart stalked forward, his fist drawn tight.
Hold it, Hart!
On the ground, Lyle Devers rolled over onto his back and started to rise up, but Sims planted the point of his cane on Devers' chest and pinned him down.
Stay down, you idiot. Tell him what he wants to know. Priest is headed for Sonora, isn't he?
I don't know. Swan went with him. To collect our fee.
There, you see how easy that was?
Sims turned to Sullivan Hart, who stood 10 feet away, ready to spring forward again.
He said Priest is headed for Sonora.
But I didn't know.
Sims jammed that cane harder into his chest.
Lie still.
He didn't tell you that, Sims.
Yes, he did. He said young Swan went with Priest to collect their legal fees. Isn't that true, Devers?
That's right, Hart. They're headed for Sonora. This isn't over between us, Hart.
you can consider yourself sued.
You don't know when to shut up, do you, Devers?
Sullivan Hart started forward once again, but this time Two Jack Roth stepped out from the crowd, caught his arm, and stopped him.
Come on, Hart. You got what you came for. Let's get moving.
Sims is lying. Devers never told him that.
Can't you see what Sims did? He knew Priest was headed for Sonora all along. He's just playing it this way to get you to beat the hell out of Devers. You know how quick Charlie is. He's playing with all of us.
Yeah? Well, this time I'm glad he was.
Sim stepped toward Hart, limping on his cane. Behind Sims, Devers crawled a few feet away before rising to his feet and slinking off toward his office.
Feel better now?
A little. If you're all through fooling around, we best get underway. Did you straighten things out with Jake Coke?
Yep. Coke's with us 100%.
Then where is he?
Oh, he's already headed out.
Headed out to where?
Why, to Sonora, of course. I figured Priest went as far as he could by train or stagecoach, especially if he had that young attorney with him. Priest likes to travel in comfort as far as he can. He figures we'll be on his trail, so he'll be bound to set a few traps for us along the way. We'll just have to be ready for him.
How does Coke play into this?
Jake Coke is headed out straight across Indian territory. With any luck at all, he'll be getting to Sonora around the same time as Priest. Now, Coke is going to work his way into Los Pistoleros and lead us to their hiding place. It pays to have a man on the inside.
You came up with all this since we left Parker's office this morning?
Well, makes sense, don't you think? Now let's get moving. I want to slip out of town without Kate. She's got no business in this. If things go the way I got them planned, we'll be fighting Los Pistoleros down below the border. Things are going to get a little ugly, and I don't want Kate involved.
You think of everything, don't you, Quick Charlie?
I certainly try to. It pays to look ahead.
Yeah? Well, one day you're going to slip up. You're going to outsmart yourself. Mark my words.
But Sims didn't seem to hear. His mind was on J.T. Priest and Los Pistoleros. J.T. Tuck Priest looked out the window of the stagecoach, watching the land roll past through a rise of dust from the large wheels. Beside him, R. Martin Swan, attorney at law, sat with his brown bowler hat lowered on his brow, dozing in the noon heat with his tie loosened and his leather satchel cradled on his knees. Across from the two of them, a couple of young cowhands slept off their hangovers on the way back to Texas. In the cramped quarters, the cowhand directly across from Tuck Priest sat with his dirty boot crossed onto his knee. Twice in the past few minutes, Priest had to shove the boot away to keep it from rubbing dirt on his new pinstripe trousers. Now, as the boot once again encroached toward him, Priest stared hard at the slumbering face of the young drover.
Hey, you, cowboy, wake up!
What?
Hearing Priest's voice, R. Martin Swan raised his face and lifted his hat brim.
Yes, sir. Excuse me.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to this crude Peckerwood.
Oh, I see. Perhaps we could have the driver pull over for a moment to get ourselves better situated.
You happen to have a gun in that pile of paperwork?
No, of course not.
Priest glared at Swan in disgust, then shook his head and gazed out the window again. Across from R. Martin Swan, the other cowhand had heard the conversation.
What do you say about a gun?
Well, my nothing. Nothing at all.
Priest only turned from the window long enough to shoot the cowhand a hate-filled glance. Then he looked back out the window, toward a fresh rise of dust moving upward along a distant ridge line.
Yeah, he did. I heard him. Hey, Casey, wake up.
What?
You got an old boy wanting to shoot you for rubbing your boots on him.
Do what?
Oh, my. I'm afraid you must have misinterpreted Mr. Priest's words. He was simply using a wry form of humor to express what he obviously felt was a...
The hell's he saying, Bill?
I don't know, but Fat Boy there was asking him if he had a gun. Seems you got some dust on his trousers.
Fat boy! You don't know who you're talking to, do you, cowboy?
I'll bet I'm fixing to find out.
Bell's right hand drifted down to the range Colt on its hip.
You damn sure are.
Gentlemen, please. My client, well, that is, Mr. Priest here, is unarmed. We're all a little testy from this heat, but surely we can calm down and act like rational men.
What heat?
Oh, hold it. This is all my fault. Mister, if I rubbed my boot against you, I apologize. Hell, I was asleep. I didn't do it on purpose.
Priest, did you say? You don't mean J.T. Priest. The man I was just reading about in the newspaper? The man who was supposed to hang for murder? The leader of some big outlaw gang? You mean you're him?
Yeah, I'm him. I'm J.T. Priest. But my friends all call me Fat Boy.
Oh, hell. I didn't mean no harm, Mr. Priest. Me and Casey here have been drunk for 3 days. If we done something wrong, we truly didn't intend to.
J.T. Priest only glared at him. Swan and the two cowboys craned their necks, trying to look out the windows at the sound of the horse. But J.T. Priest only sat silent, still staring at Bell.
Boys, we're not carrying any payload!
Who asked you?
Don't call!
Oh, Lord.
Casey saw 9 gunmen circling in close around the small stagecoach. He pulled his face back from the window, his eyes going first to his friend Bell, then to J.T. Priest.
We're done for, ain't we?
Priest only offered a slight smile, sitting back, folding his hands in his lap. Beside him, R. Martin Swan sat wide-eyed, his mouth agape.
Mr. Priest? I can't be a party to a robbery! As your attorney, I have to advise you that this is a reckless way to begin your freedom.
Shut up, Swan. You heard the driver. There's no payload on here. Just some friends of mine come calling.
You in there, Tuck?
A horse moved up close to the coach's window.
I'm here, Macklenburg. Give us a minute to say goodbye.
Priest looked first at Swan, then back at Bell and Casey.
If I let yous go, it's gonna be a long, hot walk back to town, don't you think?
Hell, we don't mind.
Oh, no, sir, not one bit. We're ready to go right now.
I didn't think you'd mind. Now, both of yous, give me those range colts. Butts first.
Bell and Casey lifted their pistols and handed them over, a sickly look on their faces. A long streak of sweat ran down Bell's weathered cheek and dripped from the edge of his mustache.
Mr. Priest, I think you need to seriously consider the consequences of what you're doing here. Do you realize what lengths we've just gone through, keeping you off of Judge Parker's gallows? This is completely insane!
Swan, you must be the finest, most brilliant attorney I've ever seen. I owe you my life, and that's the God's honest fact. But if you don't shut your mouth, I'll put a bullet in it. Now then, boys. There's a grifter back in Fort Smith named Quick Charlie Sims. Either of you know him?
Quick Charlie Sims? Hell yes, everybody knows Quick Charlie. We played poker with him a few nights back.
All right, now, listen close. I want you to walk back to the relay station, find yourselves a way back to Fort Smith, and give Sims a little message for me. Would you mind doing that?
Not at all, Mr. Priest, sir. We'd be pleased to do it.
Outside the stagecoach, Rance Macklenburg and the others grew restless waiting in the heat.
Are you all through saying goodbye? It ain't getting no cooler out here waiting for you.
Priest hefted both pistols in his hands, checking them out. Then he swung the door open and motioned the two cowboys out.
Damn, it's a beautiful day. Come on, lawyer. Don't make me start thinking it'd be easier to kill you than it would be to pay you your fee.
Mr. Priest, this is not what we agreed to. I'm simply to accompany you to Texas, collect the legal fees from my partners and myself, and return to Fort Smith.
And so you will, Swan. First, I gotta collect the money to pay those fees. I expect you boys are all eager to get to making some money.
You got it, boss.
Macklenburg pitched the black gelding's reins down to Priest.
If you don't mind me asking, JT, why don't you shoot this Peckerwood? He's just going to get in our way wherever we go.
I'll take care of our brilliant young attorney here. He looks like he could use a few days of fresh air and sunshine, wouldn't you say? There's a ranch down the other side of Mobita I want him to see.
Anything you say, boss.
Priest turned to one of the horsemen nearest to him in Macklenburg.
Clayton, you and your brother Earl set fire to this rig. I don't want nothing left but a pile of ashes.
Priest nudged his horse away from the stagecoach with Rance Macklenburg close by his side.
Where's your manners, Mac? Introduce me to these new men.
Sure, JT. Dean Spence, Harry Turpin, Clarence Ames, Huey Moss, Leonard Hergo, Dick Witt.
Damn good to see you, boys. As of now, you're all riding with Los Pistoleros. Be proud of it.
The men nodded their greetings in return.
What about those cowboys, boss? Now why don't we kill them?
They're doing me a favor. Did you send the word out to anybody who's ever ridden with Los Pistoleros? I want every gun behind me from now on. I've lost a lot, and it's time I take back what's mine.
The word's out, JT, just like I asked. We'll be gathering strength as we go.
Good work, Mac. Parker will have his deputies trailing me by now. We'll leave some men waiting for him along the way. I'll pay $1,000 a head to anybody who takes down Sullivan Hart or Two Jack Raw.
Don't you want to take care of Quick Charlie Sims first, boss?
Nope. I got plans for Sims. First of all, I want to make a stop at that ranch I was talking about on our way to the border, get ourselves up some money, gather our forces. Then I want to find myself a woman. Hell, make that three or four women all at once. Soon as I get myself filled up on the things I've been missing the most, we'll take care of Quick Charlie Sims. Any idea what I'm gonna do to that snake?
Oh yeah, I got some notions. After all he did to you, to this whole gang for that matter.
Good. Then I don't need to explain. As soon as Sims shows his face, I'm paying $2,000 to any member of Los Pistoleros who brings me his head in a gunny sack. You heard me right, boys. $2,000. Just to be able to look into his eyes and know they ain't looking back at me.
I figure you're right about Hart and Roth coming after you, boss. But how do you know Sims will show up?
Oh, he'll be coming. I can promise you that. Let's move. I happen to have the one thing that Sims cares about more than life itself, Mac. I have Kate McCorkle.
You do?
Oh, yes, indeed, I do. She's on her way to Sonora right now. I've learned that the only way to deal with a gamesman like Sims is to think ahead of him. Get the first punch in while he's not expecting it.
Priest jerked his head back toward the two cowboys as they disappeared over a rise.
I just sent them to tell him. If he ever wants to see Kate alive in one piece, he'll have to come to Sonora alone and face what's waiting there for him.
Kate McCorkle had already thrown a few things together for the road, taking her personal items from the large trunk she usually kept them in and stuffing them down into a pair of worn saddlebags.
If Charlie Sims has any notion of leaving me behind while he traipses out across Indian territory, he better think again.
Earlier, when she'd gone back to the saloon to meet Sims, Rudy the bartender had told her Sims, Hart, and Roth had left town over 2 hours ago.
I will not be left behind, even if it is for my own good. I can handle myself. Charlie ought to know that by now.
An evening breeze stirred through the open window as she stepped out of her dress, letting it fall to the floor. Then she walked into the small adjoining dressing room. She took her riding clothes down from the shelf and began putting them on, first unstrapping her hideaway holsters and laying her pistols on a stool beside her. She put on her riding skirt and her cotton blouse, first taking the time to adjust the straight razor in its leather case up under her arm, held there by a soft cotton harness. Then she slipped into her riding vest. At the sound of the boots coming from the bedroom, her hand went for one of the pistols, but then froze as the outline of the three men filled the doorway.
Don't try it, McCorkle.
Roundhouse Eddie had his Colt in his hand. On either side of him stood Pete Lambertus and Big Joe Macon, each with their pistols drawn and aimed at her. Kate McCorkle let her hand ease back from her guns, but she stayed tense, looking for some move to make, but seeing none.
So, I take it this isn't a social call? If you came looking for Charlie, he's not here. He rode out on the afternoon stage, headed south for New Orleans. Sorry to disappoint you.
Shut up, McCorkle. We know you're lying.
Lambertus stepped forward, grabbing her roughly and swinging her around, turning her back to him as he yanked out a long length of rawhide. He snatched her wrist and pulled him behind her, binding him quickly.
We're one step ahead of you two snakes. We'd find Sims easy enough if we wanted him, but we don't want him. We came here for you. That little episode last night over the card game was all set up. We just needed to feel everybody out, see which one of you was a real gun handler. Now we're taking you for a little ride with us.
Where to?
Never mind where. You'll see when we get there. An old friend of yours sent us here. Said he wants to see you real bad.
Yeah.
Big Joe Macon grabbed Kate around her waist, raising her onto her tiptoes against his chest.
J.T. Priest sent us for you, but I don't reckon he'd mind if I smell your hair a little on the way.
Smell this, you son of a bitch!
Kate McCorkle's boot came up behind her hard, burying the edge of its heel in Big Joe's crotch.
Get her, Pete!
Lambertus sprang forward, throwing an arm around Kate's throat and pulling her back.
Knife in the way! Damn, lady, you nearly put Big Joe on his knees. Try that with me, and I'll pistol whip you all the way to Mexico.
Shut up, Pete. She don't need to know where we're going.
Roundhouse Eddie jerked the dusty bandana from around his neck and pitched it to Lambertus.
Gag her. Let's get moving.
Sims will kill you, all three of you, you pigs. If he doesn't, I will. I swear to God.
I don't think you're in a position to make any threats. And as far as Sims goes, we already seen him hide behind your skirt tails. It would almost be worth giving up what we're getting paid just to shoot her and Sims ourselves, wouldn't it? After the way they treated us.
Not for me, Eddie. I'm in it for the money. Keep that in mind, both of you, from here on.
Don't worry, I'll keep it in mind. Damn, Big Joe. Are you able to ride?
I'm all right. Here, but keep her away from me, or I'll kill her.
Yeah. We won't let her too near you from now on. Wouldn't want you hurting her.
Roundhouse Eddie reached inside his shirt, pulled out a wrinkled envelope, and pitched it on the feather bed.
I'd love to see Sim's face when he reads that.
Kate just looked at him, not about to tell him that Sims had already left town. At dawn, Jake Coke had already traveled past the army encampment to his right and onward toward the North Fork of the Red. Guiding the dapple gray beneath rock ledges and along soft dirt, he kept its hooves and the hooves of the three horses behind him from going across stone where the sound would carry. Quiet was now the difference between life and death if Victorio's warriors were nearby. And they were. He'd come upon a set of unshod tracks less than a quarter of a mile from his campsite. All he could do now was try to sidestep them, weave past them somehow. The tracks had belonged to one lone scout. If that scout was any good, he'd have picked up Coke's trail by now. Coke stopped the dapple gray for a second beside a thin runoff of water and listened intently for any sound on the air. He coaxed the horse forward, leading the other three upward into a narrow crevice of rock. From a more narrow crevice above him, Buster swept down and sat on the ground a few feet away, the dog's full attention given to probing the air with its raised muzzle.
Talk to me, Buster.
The dog rose and moved forward a few slow, cautious steps, then stopped, its hackles raised. Coke eased a hand down to his boot and lifted the long bowie knife from his boot well. Then he moved upward, taking to the smaller crevice the dog had used, until he was a few feet above the horses. He inched forward into a slice of sunlight and looked down from atop his boulder perch. Beneath him, less than 20 feet down, he watched the thin young warrior stoop in front of his horse and touch his bony fingers to his horse's fresh hoof prints, reading them as if they were words on a printed page. Coke inched close to the edge of the boulder, ready to make the long leap, knowing it was too high, knowing that the least slip-up would leave him lying dead in the morning sun. He watched as the warrior stood up and took a step closer toward the narrow rock crevice, feeling the scout's eyes move upward along the rocks. Coke ducked back to keep from being seen. After a moment, the warrior swung up onto his horse and backed it away from the rock crevice a few feet before turning it and giving it his heels.
All right.
Coke moved back and down quickly. The other mescaleros had to be close by. That was all that had kept the scout from venturing into the crevice where the three horses stood back behind the dog. Whatever awaited the lone warrior inside the crevice was not worth the risk. Not when all he had to do was go summon the others. Coke knew this, and knowing it made him act fast. Coke led the horses deeper back onto the upward path through the crevice. At the top of the pass, where the land reopened onto a rocky ledge, he swung atop the dapple gray and drew his rifle from his holster. Looking down, he spotted a half dozen warriors as they raced forward, the scout leading the others back to where he'd followed Coke's tracks. Coke raised his rifle. Rock and dirt sprayed upward at their horses' hooves, sending the animals backwards, bunching them up onto themselves. Then, as the warriors righted their spooked horses, Jake sat tall and still in his saddle, purposefully skylining himself, holding up the reins to the three-horse string. As the warriors looked up, Coke dropped the reins to the three spare horses, back to Dapple Gray and slapped a hand on one of the horse's rumps, sending them all back down the crevice path.
All right, Victorio. These horses are free. Anything else is going to cost you plenty.
Coke sat for a moment in full view, his rifle propped on his thigh, letting the warriors get the idea. He wanted to show no fear, just good reasoning. The three horses broke free of the crevice and into the waiting hands of the young scout and another warrior. Coke saw the eyes of the lead warrior look at him and offer a sharp nod. Then, Coke backed the dapple gray slowly, taking his time. Only when he knew he was out of sight did he turn the horse and look down at the Catahoula.
Let's get out of here, Buster, before they change their minds.
Throughout the rest of the day, Coke rode without incident, but he did carefully choose the cover of brush, dry washes, and shadowed ledges. He knew if Sims, Hart, and Roth came along this same trail, which no doubt they would, the mescaleros would be waiting for him. But there was nothing he could do about that. If the army hadn't found Victorio's band and chased them southwest, the deputies were going to have their hands full. In the late afternoon, Coke spotted a long rise of dust 2 miles to his left, and he swung toward it. As he'd suspected, it was Captain Vertrees and his cavalry. Coke made his way up an incline. Then he lay in wait above a rocky ledge just to test the skill of Vertrees' forward scout. Coke stood up slowly and waved his rifle back and forth as the single rider moved forward within 10 yards without showing any sign of having known Coke was there. But when the scout saw Coke and nudged his horse toward him, Coke noted no surprise on the bearded, dust-covered face as the man stepped his horse quarter-wise the last few feet.
We're seeing a lot of you these days, Deputy. Did you run into trouble and have to turn back?
No, nothing of the sort. I've already been to Fort Smith and back.
Coke moved down from his lofty position with his sawed-off rifle in his hand.
You're lucky you didn't run into Victorio. We've got him on the run, but he's still got some fight in him.
I did run into him and his men earlier. I passed along three horses to him, then lit out. Keep on the way you're headed, and I expect you'll be tangling with them come morning.
We figured as much. I'm Sam Greaves. I've been riding point all day. Captain Vertrees hoped that seeing our dust might draw Victorio into a fight, but I might have known better. Victorio didn't get as old as he is by falling for any tricks that the army can come up with. I don't expect you'll be wanting to travel with us. Give yourself some protection in case Victorio's got some stragglers back that way.
No, but much obliged. I've got to push forward. Parker's got me trailing some men all the way across Texas. Seen anything back that way I ought to know about?
There's four horsemen about 10 miles back headed toward the Red. They took care not to be approached. Don't know what they're up to, but you might want to ride wide of them.
Well, thank you. I'll do that if I can. There's three deputies back there coming this way. Should be about 10 hours behind me by now. I bet they'd appreciate you keeping Victorio off their backs.
We'll keep an eye out for him. You'd do well to let him catch up to you, wouldn't you? Stay close to the pack, take some safety in numbers.
I might say the same to you, but I expect we're alike in that regard. The only person I like watching my back is me.
I understand. I had an old teamster tell me he once saw you snuff out a row of candles with that rifle of yours. Is that the truth?
Snuff out candles? Now why would I do a fool thing like that?
That's what I wondered. Just thought I'd ask.
The two men parted in opposite directions, the dog waiting until the scout was 20 yards away before coming down a snaking path from the rock ledge and moving forward onto Coke's trail. Late evening shadows stretched long across the floor of a sandy rock basin by the time Coke caught sight of four fresh sets of shod hoof prints that had broken sharply left of his path. He slowed the dapple gray and sidestepped it past the darkened shadows of a deep crevice.
Who goes in there?
Coke began the counting in his mind. It was the only thing that kept him focused.
1,000. 2,000. 3,000.
Without even checking to see, Coke knew the dog had dropped off behind him and by now would be circling, getting behind whoever waited. Coke levered his rifle one-handed, searching the shadows.
Best tell me something. I hate guessing games.
Hold down, we're coming out.
Still, Coke counted to himself, watching the four horsemen file out and stop their horses abreast along the stony path.
We heard your horse and decided we better drop to the side. Can't be too careful out here.
That's a fact, mister.
The men had the look of long trails and bad whiskey. Each wore a tied-down colt, and each man kept a hand near his gun butt, as if on instinct.
Well, we're headed to Texas from New Orleans. I'm Lewis Pryor. These are my partners, Bob Hearns, Tommy Kendall, and Bo Romans.
Coke looked at the faces of the other three men, comparing them to old wanted posters he'd carried over the past year. He couldn't say one way or the other about Bob Hearns, as the man's face did not look familiar to him. But the others, oh, he recognized them right away. On Lewis Pryor's right, a stocky man stared at him. The man's name was not Tommy Kendall, at least not according to Pinkerton's detective agency. His name was Orville Maines, a gunman and train robber out of Kansas. Next to Maines sat a tall, thin man with a pockmarked face and a long, crooked nose. Pryor had called him Bo Romans, but Coke recognized him as Harvey Kettle, also known as Hook-Nosed Snell and Black Bow.
You took the long way, didn't you?
What's that? Oh, from New Orleans. Yeah, I suppose we did at that. You look familiar. Have we run into one another before? Say, Texas? Abilene?
Yeah, we met before. I nearly bagged you for a reward back last year. You just happened to get out of my gun sights while I blew the hell out of your old buddy Morris Newirth. I'm Coke, Jake Coke.
The men tensed as one. Coke sat calm, but with his hand ready on his rifle.
1,000. 2,000.
That was back before I quit bounty hunting. No hard feelings, I hope.
By God, I thought it was you. Oh, I did have to leave town in a hurry. Lost a fine pair of boots.
We all lose stuff along the way.
Yeah, we do. Well, since it was old Morse and not me who blew all to hell, I reckon I got no hard feelings. Man has to make his living some way. Can't say I was all broke up over Morse Newark's death anyway.
Good. Seems everywhere I go, I run into somebody I used to hunt for a living. I get tired of having to excuse myself.
Coke let his hand visibly relax on his rifle stock.
How long ago did you quit bounty hunting?
A few months back. Went to work for Judge Parker. Turned out that wasn't worth fooling with. I'm looking around now, seeing what's left to get into, you might say.
You shouldn't have any trouble finding something. I've seen how you can spray that thing around when you want to.
Yeah. You dogged me and some pals of mine for over a week coming out of Denton last year.
Coke noted the bitterness in Roman's tone.
I know you thought I was on your tail, Hooknose, but you were wrong. You never was worth over $250 facing up or down. You were just spooked on Snakehead Whiskey.
Bo Romans threw a harsh stare at Kendall.
Nobody calls me Hooknose anymore. I never did like it. It's plain old Bo Romans from now on.
So be it. Bo Romans?
Coke turned his eyes to Tommy Kendall.
What about you? Does anybody still call you Orville Maines, or is that out of fashion?
I'll be damned. Even his mama forgot his name was ever Orville. How'd you come by it, Coke?
An old Pinkerton poster. You'd be surprised what a man can learn from riding bounty.
Yeah, I'll bet. I don't suppose you heard any dirt on me that I ought to know about, have you?
You wouldn't have any whiskey or coffee or anything fit to drink, would you?
Well, we might.
I ain't drinking with no law dog.
And you won't be drinking with one now. I told you I was out of the law business. If I wasn't, we wouldn't be talking this long. You'd already be dead, Bob Hearns.
Well, you sound awfully cocksure yourself.
Oh, hush up, Bob. Can a man change his ways? Hell, I had an uncle once been a preacher his whole life, took to drinking, chasing whores, winded up dead of the clap in a St. Louis sanitarium. Said he never regretted a moment of it. You can't always judge a man straight up. Coffee, huh? Yeah, we got some. No whiskey, though.
Coffee will do for me. I've been ducking Apache all day. Hadn't had a chance to stop.
Yeah, us too. Hadn't figured on Mescaleras being around here. Where are you headed, Coke? You don't mind saying.
Beats me, like I said. I'm looking.
Yeah? Well, we're meeting up with some old boys here sometime tomorrow if they ain't got themselves shot. We're headed for the border. You can ride along with us as far as you need to. I'd like to hear more about what you learned bounty hunting.
I thought you might. I'll gather some brush for a fire. We'll bank it low. Keep the Mescaleros out of our hair.
Coke shot a quick glance at Bob Hearns, seeing the angry look on his face.
Whatever you're thinking, Hearns, either put it out of your mind or put it into play. I can't stand drinking coffee with somebody bad eyeing me.
What the hell is the matter with you, Hearns? All Coke here ever did was kill men for money. Now you tell us you ain't done the same thing at some time or another.
You really don't remember me, do you?
No, I reckon I don't.
It was 1861. That one-room schoolhouse. Somebody stole the bell off the post out front. Sound familiar?
Yeah, it does. Well, I'll be your Henry Hearns, my worst old student.
That's me, all right. Bob Henry Hearns. You don't know how many nights I've laid awake hoping I'd meet up with you again. My pa took a layer of hide off my back with a razor strap over you accusing me of stealing that damn bell. I owe you something for that.
You did steal it, didn't you?
That ain't the point. You had no proof.
No proof? Oh, hell, Henry. Your neighbors heard you ringing it half a mile away. Said half the men folks left the fields an hour early thinking it was dinner time.
That don't matter. I've waited half my life to kill you, Coke.
Whoa! Let's stop it right here, boys. I've seen men on the vengeance trail for lots of reasons, but I'll be goddamned if I ever seen it over stealing a schoolhouse bell. Heard, you better calm yourself down. You fire that pistol and bring a mess of Apache down our shirts, you and I are gonna have a serious damn problem.
All right, Pryor. I'm off the pride for now. But mind what I'm saying, Coke. You and I are gonna finish this thing. First chance I get.
Coke didn't answer. Instead, he stood firm, staring at Henry Hearns until Hearns finally stepped sidelong and turned away from him.
Coke, you taught school?
Oh, yeah, some. Back before the war.
And now you got former students wanting to kill you? That's the damnedest thing I ever heard of.
Me too. That's the first one I ever ran into. But for all I know, there might be others.
Sullivan Hart, Two Jack Roth, and Quick Charlie Sims had only stopped at the relay station long enough to water their horses and to ask the old hostler if two men fitting the description of J.T. Priest and R. Martin Swan had been on one of the stages coming through from Fort Smith. But before the hostler had finished answering them, the two cowboys, Bell and Casey, came walking out of the door of the relay shack.
Barnes, did you tell him what happened?
The old hostler turned back to the men.
No, but I was just fixing to. They was on the stage all right, day before yesterday. They threw these boys off and sent them back here on foot.
That's right. We can't swear to it, but it looked like they might have burned a stage after we left. We saw smoke.
You didn't go back to check?
Hell no. We was lucky we didn't get a bullet in the back as it was. Only reason we figured they didn't kill us was because they wanted us to deliver a message to you. I hate to tell you, Quick Charlie, the priest is holding your woman hostage. Said if you want to see her alive again, you'll have to come face him in Sonora.
But that's...
Quick Charlie Sims had started to say it was impossible, priest holding Kate McCorkle hostage. Yet as he put it together in his mind, he realized that while he'd been figuring a way to outfox J.T. Priest, he'd allowed himself to be taken in by him. Of course, Priest hadn't taken Kate hostage himself. But as Sims felt the low, sick feeling deep down in his stomach, he knew that J.T. Priest had sent somebody to snatch Kate right from under his nose.
Jesus!
Don't jump to conclusions, Sims. This could all be a bluff on Priest's part.
No, it's the truth. He pulled it off some way or he wouldn't be saying it. Damn it! I've been a fool. First thing I should have expected was something like this.
Roth and Hart looked at each other for a second.
Go on back to Fort Smith. We'll stay on this trail. For all he knows, you never got the message. He can't hold you to something you didn't know about.
Sure he will, too, Jack. Don't you see? He gets his revenge whether I show or not. He's had plenty of time to sit and think this out in his cell. If he kills Kate because I don't show up, knows I'll have to live with that the rest of my life. And he's right. If I show up, he'll kill me and her, too. Either way, he wins!
Hart looked away toward the southwest, in the direction of the distant trail where Sims had sent Jake Coke.
Whoever he had take her, they didn't come this way. Or we'd have seen some sign of them along the trail. Two Jack, you seen anybody behind us?
No, there's nobody back there. No dust, nothing. Anybody riding for Priest wouldn't risk riding our trail. Not with Kate McCorkle in tow.
You want to cut down, maybe catch up with Coke, watch the trail along the way?
No. If whoever has Kate is on the same trail as Coke, he'll see him. I'm going on the way we're headed. I have to figure out my move along the way.
Sims looked down at the two cowboys.
Do they have any spare horses?
No. They can't travel any faster than you three can. Fact is, they'll be traveling slower. J.T. Priest was riding double with some puny-looking dude who called himself an attorney. Riding double will slow them down by half in this heat across this rocky land.
Then come on. We can push hard, close in on them.
Take it easy, Sims. This is no time to go killing our horses. Let's stop here and water down. If Barnes will let us have some extra horses, we'll ride straight through the night.
You can have every horse on the place if it'll help. Come on, I'll help you cut out the three best ones.
Sims bolted on ahead to the corral.
This is taking a bad turn. Kate McCorkle is Sim's only weakness. If she's in trouble, we'll have to watch him. Make sure he doesn't lose his head and do something stupid.
I just wonder what Coke is doing along the other trail. Think there's any chance of him running into whoever has Kate?
The odds are long against it. But who knows? Maybe Coke will get lucky on us.
Jake Coke spent the night with Lewis Pryor and the others, camped beneath the rise and rock crevices. No sooner had the coffee boiled than they'd killed the small fire and drank and talked in the thin light of a quarter moon. Coke let Pryor and the others see him keeping an eye on Bob Hearns as he told Lewis Pryor and Bo Romans about the bad deal he'd gotten from Judge Parker and how Parker had fired him for some trivial matter. As Coke talked about it, Lewis Pryor had only nodded, weighing his words.
I always said Parker was a no-good bastard. I reckon you just had to learn it the hard way. That's a damn shame. A man can't even trust a federal judge for a fair shake. Makes you wonder what this country's coming to.
Ain't that the truth?
When it came time to turn in for the night, Coke spread his blanket at the base of the rock crevice, knowing that Buster lay somewhere up there, watching, listening. Yet, even with the dog guarding his back, Coke allowed himself to only fall into a half sleep, keeping his senses tuned toward the dark camp and any sound in the night. Near dawn, he heard the voices of Lewis Pryor and Bo Romans.
Pryor, maybe Bob Hearns was right. We don't know what Coke has in mind.
You worry too damn much. Can't you see the man is packing a mad on of Judge Parker? If I had a dollar for every man Parker fired, I'd be fatter than a coon in a cornfield. Half of Parker's deputies are just outlaws in the making any damn way. Besides, there's no price on any of our heads. If Coke's back to bounty hunting, he knows he struck a dry well here. Now what's the worst that can happen, huh? There's four of us, three more coming tomorrow. If he ain't on the level, we're gonna find out. But if he really is looking for something to get into, well, there ain't a better man to have on our side.
Did you know that about him, that he used to be a school teacher?
No, I didn't know that. I might not have been so friendly if I had, but it makes no difference. He's still a good man with a gun.
Well, Hearns said he remembered Coke used to carry a cur pup around in a gunny sack. Said by the time that pup was 3 months old, you couldn't get near Coke without it trying to take your leg off.
So?
Well, so nothing. I also heard he traveled with a big cur down in Texas. That dog was as bad as he was about throwing down on a fellow.
Did you see any dog, Bo?
No, I didn't.
Well, then hush, damn it. You're starting to sound like an old woman. We got some big days ahead of us. We can use good gunmen.
Well, he ain't losing no sleep over Hearns wanting to kill him, that's for sure.
Yeah. Huh. I like that kind of nerve in a man.